We've all got destinations on our moto bucket list that we'd love to ride. But if you want to go to, let's say, maybe Africa, how do you even start planning a trip that epic? Enter Kevin Bulger. He and his wife Sylvia founded the moto touring company I Ride Arusha in Sylvia's home country of Tanzania. Their goal? Showcasing not only the natural beauty of East Africa, but also the amazing riding, both on and off-road, including places that you can only get to on two wheels. Originally from Chicago, Kevin's eyes were opened to exploration by simply jumping on an old motorcycle and exploring his hometown, realizing that if he could explore every neighborhood in the second city, why not explore the whole world? Partnering with the already established I Ride Africa, Sylvia and Kevin moved to Tanzania and dove right in, with the ultimate goal of creating a network of locations around East Africa like Nairobi, Kigali, and Dar es Salaam. After talking with Kevin, you'll realize a motorcycle trip to Africa is totally within reach, even if it takes you a day and a half of travel to get there. This is Kevin Bulger. I'm your host, Mark Long, and you're listening to Driven to Ride. All right, Kevin Bulger, you are on Driven to Ride. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Yeah. I'm excited to dive into everything that you do. You're a fellow Chicagoan, and it's cool to be in person. Technically, I should say a native Chicagoan, because spoiler alert, you're not here anymore.
Correct.
Let me just start by asking you, what do people maybe most know you for, or what is kind of your claim to fame in your own words?
Yeah, good question. A legend in my own right, of course. I think my claim to fame currently is I own a motorcycle tour and rental company in Tanzania in East Africa called I Ride Arusha. So my wife and myself and our three-year-old son, we're living there trying to grow this business. But like you said, I'm originally from Glenview. And super excited to kind of tell you a little bit about our story today.
Yeah, man, I'm stoked to hear about this. Because, I mean, people, obviously, motorcyclists are pretty adventurous. They travel all over the world. I think Africa is maybe one of those places that is on a lot of people's bucket lists. But it seems maybe inaccessible, or maybe they don't even know that they can do guided tours in Africa. So I'm stoked to kind of dig into all this. But how did you get into motorcycling in the first place? I don't want to get too far ahead of myself.
Yeah, no, good question. I'm not one of those guys that, like, you know, has been riding since I was 5 years old.
Right.
When in my early 20s, I was living in Chicago in the city, and I bought a 125cc motorbike, and it really was my sort of entry level into the world of motorcycling. And what I always tell people is I bought that bike and I literally rode it to every corner and every neighborhood in the city. And it yeah. kind of opened my eyes a little bit of like, wow, how diverse and broad and really just like wonderful Chicago is. And that kind of got me interested in, wow, wanting to explore the wider world in general. And as you know, riding a motorcycle is, incredibly fun. Somebody once told me, like, when you're in a car, it's like you're watching a movie. When you're on a motorcycle, it's like you're in the movie. So that yeah. was sort of the experience I had that got me into motorcycles. And then in terms of, you know, Tanzania, how did I end up there? Kid from, you know, the Chicago suburbs.
Yeah.
I was living in Los Angeles and I met my wife, who is Tanzanian.
Oh, cool.
So okay. She grew up most of her life in Long Beach, California. We met, dated for a number of years, got married, and we had been kind of thinking like, you know, how could we get to Tanzania, maybe start a business? It's a developing country, so there's so many opportunities.
Sure.
We, of course, had visited. And about 2 years ago, we finally just took the plunge and we kind of moved over there, and one thing led to another, and kind of here we are with our business, I Ride Arusha.
Yeah, nice. And from what I kind of read a little bit, you seem like you're almost maybe I don't know if I want to say a serial entrepreneur, but you're kind of, you've got that business mind in your own sense. So it wasn't a completely foreign concept to start your own business.
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, when I was in Chicago in my 20s and early 30s, I was doing some sort of real estate investing.
Okay.
And my background has been working at startup companies in sort of operations. So I was always kind of very close to that entrepreneurial mindset, and always had in the back of my mind, you know, wanting to start something on my own one day. Pros and cons of starting a business in the U.S. versus Tanzania. There's lots of different ones. I think the big benefit of Tanzania is the barrier to entry is quite a bit lower in terms of cost and expenses.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was also in the back of my mind as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's take it back to Chicago a little bit, because that's kind of where, like you said, your motorcycle kind of passion started. Where were you kind of living in the city at the time? And like,
How did you kind of expand your horizons exploring with that bike?
Yeah. So at the time I was living in Old Town.
Okay, yeah.
And so that was a great area to kind of get north, south or west. And I was actually, at that time, I was actually a teacher in my early 20s.
Oh,
so
no,
I,
okay.
I was teaching in North Lawndale on the west side. And I would ride my bike to school through a lot of different neighborhoods. And it was always something interesting or someone interesting on the way. And so that was sort of my entry into it. And then from there, I would really just ride anywhere and everywhere I could, try to, go get food in, Lawndale, get some good Mexican food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of go all over. And that was sort of my entry into it from there.
So what like prompted you to kind of get the bike in the first place?
It's a good question. I think I had been doing a lot of cycling, actually, because,
sure.
I would get on that lakeshore path on my bicycle, mm-hmm. had a road bike, and that was fun.
Yeah.
But I guess I just wanted a little bit more power or something, a little bit more exciting. And I remember I bought it off Craigslist from a guy. I don't even think I ever got the bike registered, if I'm being honest. I didn't get my license at the time, which I cannot recommend, of course. But that I just kind of didn't think too hard about it. And I just got on and rode.
Yeah. I mean, in a big city, you kind of can blend in and kind of have some anonymity there. So you can get away with it, I guess.
Yeah. And
it's
I did for a while until at one point I did get pulled over had to pay a hefty fine. And that kind of led me, okay, maybe I should make this thing street legal and get my license. And so that was the crux to make that happen.
Sure. Okay. So then when you moved out west, did you continue with motorcycling?
I really didn't. So,
no way. Okay.
I was working on another crazy kind of startup job, and I think I was a little bit intimidated of that traffic on the 405.
Yeah,
and you see, the bikes cutting in between traffic, and I was, going from my 125cc to something like that on the 405. I was a little bit intimidated, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't pick up riding until I was in Tanzania again on a visit.
And
I met a guy and he actually took me for a lesson, and we were back in these coffee farms overlooking Mount Kilimanjaro, and it was just spectacular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had all those feelings of when I first got on the bike in Chicago again. And that was when sort of the seed was planted of, hey, maybe if we ever come back here one day, we could start something, because the opportunity was there. And of course the riding is amazing too.
Yeah. And so you're probably doing more at least on that ride, it was probably more adventure riding, kind of some on-road, off-road stuff.
Yeah. And that's the great thing, about Tanzania, is there's a little bit of everything. I have riders that are, hey, I want mostly tarmac actually. And we can do that. And
okay.
Then there's the thrill seekers that want to, rip it up on sand and do anything else.
Yeah.
And we can cater to them as well. So for me, I consider myself very much a beginner rider still, I think it's important to have that beginner's mindset, especially
sure.
when you're in a place where there's not a lot of structure, not a lot of infrastructure. The traffic patterns can change very, very quickly. So I think it's good to have that sort of beginner mindset. So I'm definitely not, in spite of owning a motorcycle tour company, wouldn't consider myself, a super experienced rider.
Sure. Yeah, that's probably not a bad way to do it, especially with, I have to imagine, riding in the U.S. and riding in Tanzania, like you kind of alluded to a little bit, are two almost completely different things, right? With being in a developing nation, like you said, infrastructure, traffic. Are there some like big differences between riding in Tanzania versus riding here?
I think even just like when you get there, the scenery, everything is totally different. I always tell people it's almost like you're in a video game, because you're on the road and you're seeing things and people and buildings that just look nothing like you're doing. I don't know. I'm not a big video gamer, but like a Grand Theft Auto or one of these video games, you're in this whole different world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's part of it. And then, of course, not a lot of traffic lights, not a lot of structure. It's kind of like, organized chaos when you're in cities. And of course, when you get out of cities, amazing landscapes, super peaceful, calm. But yeah, that's the biggest thing, is almost just the scenery, and kind of like you have that realization of, wow, I'm very far from my home base now. I'm definitely not in Chicago when I'm there.
Let's dive into riding with you guys and with I Ride Arusha. You said you kind of had it as an idea to start out, but then you moved over there. How did you actually get the whole thing started?
Yeah, so I was thinking, okay, I could start something totally on my own and it would probably take some time to really grow.
Yeah.
And my wife and I kind of went over there thinking, hey, let's stay for a year. Let's explore a little bit, see if we can get something going. But instead of starting something totally brand new, I found a guy who's actually my partner now. He had a business called I Ride Nairobi, which is a motorcycle tour company in Kenya. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, hey, what if we partnered together and we can open up multiple locations across East Africa? And that's sort of our grand vision of having multiple outposts where riders can start in one location and end in another. Mm-hmm. So for us right now, we have I Ride Arusha, but we also have I Ride Dar es Salaam.
Okay.
Dar es Salaam is a city of 8 million people on the coast in Tanzania.
Okay, yeah.
So even with us, you can start in one city and end in another. But basically, just got the website going. Went out, shot a lot of content, and sort of brick by brick, kind of grew it from there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, content is so huge, especially in, you know, tour businesses. People really need to visualize and see themselves there.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was something I really wanted to kind of double down on. I hired some guys that were riders, but they were also videographers.
Oh, nice.
And so gave them a bit of discount and just let them kind of go crazy. And that's if you go to our landing page on iRideArusha.com. That footage is all sort of theirs. And we just kind of grew it. You know, I always tell people, like, running a business in Tanzania is not easy. You need a permit for anything and everything. There's tons of bureaucracy. It's very opaque sort of how you go about doing things. But as somebody said to me, you know, Kevin, it's not easy for you to start this business, but it's not easy for anyone else either. So if you can just keep going step by step and stay with it, eventually you'll kind of be in a place where you can be in a good spot.
Yeah. And I have to imagine, I mean, starting any business is going to be tough, but I mean, starting one with so much liability and renting motorcycles and doing tours and all that, that's got to make it exponentially tougher, right?
Super tough. And you sort of alluded to it too at the beginning of, like, you know, people have a little bit of a mindset of, you know, getting to Africa is inaccessible. Is it even mm-hmm. possible? And so there's a lot of just sort of customer education that we have to do to let people know, like, hey, you're going to be safe. The bikes are well maintained. Mm-hmm. We're a very professional organization. We always tell people, you know, we're going to hold your hand through the whole experience. We're not just going to, you know, pick you up at the airport and then let you run wild. So
yeah. There's
all those sort of facets of kind of educating people and letting them know, hey, you're going to have a great experience. We're going to take good care of you.
Nice. Well, let's talk about the bikes a little bit. Because I saw that you guys are running a couple of Royal Enfields and stuff, but it seems like you got a couple other manufacturers running motorcycles as well. So talk to me about the bikes, maybe, and how you kind of built up the stable, if you will.
Yeah, totally. So I think, you know, first of all, there's not really any motorcycle distributors in Tanzania. So I can't go and I can't buy a Royal Enfield or a KTM or a Suzuki or a Honda.
Yeah, there's not a Honda shop down the street or whatever.
Exactly.
You can just say, I want a dozen bikes. Yeah.
And that's
one
of the other harder things is just the barrier to entry to import the bikes. So
if
a bike costs, you know, $5,000, add a 30 to 40% tariff on top of that, essentially.
Yeah.
When I was first getting our bikes across the border, they got stopped by Interpol, which is an international, like, crime fighting organization.
Right.
And I don't really know why that happened, but I had to pay for some inspection and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like all those little things that are really hard to account for, too. But our main bike is actually, it's called the Kibo 250cc.
Okay.
It's a Dutch company, but the bikes are assembled in Kenya.
Oh, okay,
and it's,
cool.
It's essentially, they're designed for the East African terrain. So
nice. They're
great for kind of on-road, off-road, sort of a nice dual sport, not too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really nice bikes. And the company takes a lot of our feedback and integrates it into every new model.
Oh, that's super cool.
So yeah, they're great bikes. And there's a lot of, again, customer education, because people that come to Tanzania, they're saying, you know, oh, well, I ride a 1200 BMW, you know, GS, a 250 is not big enough. But we always try to explain to people, with the type of riding we do, we're on trails, we're in places where there aren't really roads oftentimes, and you don't want one of those bikes, heaven forbid, to fall down, and you need two people to get it up if it falls on your foot. The 250s are easy to maneuver, super fun. And I always tell people, too, it's better to ride a slow bike fast than a fast bike slow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can be on those and you really rip it up and we have a great time. So that's sort of our Kibo, our standard bike.
Mm-hmm.
We also have the Royal Enfield 450, the new Himalayan, which really, really fun.
Yeah, those got to be great.
Sometimes people do, you know, even in spite of my trying to convince them, they're like, no, I want something a little more premium.
Mm-hmm.
And they are great. We just actually shot some content with those.
Nice.
Super fun. But again, that's the hard part is we partner with Royal Enfield and they're sort of our distributor, but they come from India.
Right.
So just the logistics and getting all this stuff across the border is really, really crazy. It made me realize why there's not so many motorcycle tour companies in Tanzania, because
yeah.
It is really, really hard. But that was sort of the genesis of the business too, is my wife and I, we wanted to do something in tourism.
Okay.
She's Tanzanian. She
yeah.
really loves showing off the country to people.
Makes sense. Yeah.
We wanted to do something a little bit different. You know, there's literally a million safari companies, right? And
right.
you can go on a great safari. But with the bikes, we can go places that safari cars can't actually go. And we always tell people that for us, you know, the bike is really a tool to the wider experience. Like, yes,
sure,
we're going to have fun riding. You're going to have a great time. But the things we do off the bike, those are really going to be the memorable things that hopefully you take back with you. So long story short, now I'm kind of going, but getting the bikes is really, really hard. But those are our two main bikes.
Yeah.
We also have the Royal Enfield, the older 411 models, like the 21, 22 versions.
Oh, sure.
Those are getting a little bit of a high mileage now. So we're starting to phase those out and we'll kind of re-up with more of the Enfield 450s.
Okay, nice. Well, you mentioned that you get to do some, go to some places and have some experiences that your kind of general safari cars can't go. Can you tell me a little bit about what those are?
Yeah. So I think, you know, in a few of our tours, what we really like to do is we go to a place called Chemka Hot Springs,
okay.
which is basically, it's in almost like a very arid desert-like landscape, but it's a natural hot springs that bubbles up.
Oh, sick, yeah.
And very hard to get to, lots of different levels of off-road riding just to get there on the bikes.
Yeah.
And that's super fun. There's a tire swing. You can swing in, you know, kind of do that Tarzan situation.
Right, right.
I think for us, the other big one we do is we want to get off sort of the tourism, sort of the beaten path type places. So for us, we actually ride around the east side of Mount Kilimanjaro, which is kind of twisty tarmac turns, which people love. And there's, you know, pine forests there. You're right on the border of Kenya. And then you can get off and do some of the trails. And you might not see another car, let alone a safari car, for a few hours that day.
Yeah.
And then another place that we always love to take guests is my wife. Her grandmother lives in a village called Sanya Ju in the foothills of Kilimanjaro on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
And she's 86 years old and
oh, wow.
she still farms and has goats and chickens.
Wow, okay.
She lives in a house that her husband built in the 1960s. So it's just a very kind of cool, authentic experience. And we take guests there. We have a kind of authentic lunch. They get to learn a little bit about her story. So those are a few of the places that we like to do because, like I said, we want people to leave feeling like, hey, I saw a view of Tanzania that I don't think many people got to experience.
Yeah, you got kind of the real deal as opposed to maybe, I mean, because anywhere you go, there's always like, you know, for lack of a better term, tourist traps
sure.
or whatever, or kind of the stuff that you Instagram and check off the list or whatever. But to see, I always think it's like, there's a difference between like being a tourist and being like a traveler. And it
yeah.
sounds like you guys really like travel and enjoy kind of what is really going on there.
Yeah, and we hit all the hot spots too, right? Like when we have our tours, you know, we get off the bikes and we go into the Serengeti, we do a proper game drive so you can see animals and
yeah,
all the big
yeah,
five.
Yeah.
Like we're definitely going to do all that, but at the same time, we want you to leave feeling like, okay, I saw some things that I don't think a lot of other people had or would have an opportunity to see.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the bikes are really the means that let us do that, right?
Yeah,
because you
sure.
can go places that are just super hard to get to.
Yeah. Well, speaking of traveling and going to different places, can you do like a point-to-point thing with, since you have multiple locations, can you go from Arusha to Nairobi or to Dar es Salaam and kind of, or do like maybe a triangle trip or something like that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, you know, we have different types of riders with us. We have some guys that, and women, of course, that want to do a very bespoke guided tour. We'll hold your hand through the whole time.
Sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then we have people that say, hey, I just want to rent a bike. I want to go get lost. I want to do my own thing.
No way.
And they're awesome too. And yeah, we actually now have a partner in Kigali, Rwanda as well.
Okay.
So you can start in Kigali. You can end in any one of our sort of locations. And that's really the big goal, is to sort of this connected network to give people more flexibility and freedom to explore Africa on their own terms.
Yeah.
To get those passport stamps, but then to also feel like I'm supported through the whole way. And if I get a flat or I run into issues, we're still here to kind of guide you for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
For example, we have a guy that hit us up. He's coming in May. His bucket list is he wanted to see the gorillas in Rwanda. And then, of course, go to the Serengeti in Tanzania.
Sure. Yeah.
So we're working with our partner to kind of do 5 days in Rwanda where he's going to ride. and see the gorillas, and then he'll fly to Tanzania, and then we'll give him the Serengeti experience as well. So that's the fun thing, is we're still such a new company. We're still kind of figuring out what are the offerings that we should have, and we're kind of just basing it a lot on, you know, the inquiries that we get, because we have these multiple locations, we can really kind of do anything for the customer.
Yeah. How long have you been doing this? I don't even think I asked.
So we've been in business for about 18 months now.
Oh, you're like super new.
Yeah. And our partner in Kenya, he's been operating for 7 years.
Okay.
So he's really sort of like, you know, the experienced one. And then our partner in Kigali, who's now iRide Kigali, he's also been operating for 7 years. He's he's a Swiss pilot. So he works for Rwanda Air, and then he just sort of does this on the side. And I think he does quite well too.
Not a bad gig, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's talk about your team a little bit. I think your wife is part of the team.
Yep.
But you've got a whole host of other people. This isn't just you and her just fixing bikes and stuff. You got half a dozen people or so.
Yeah, exactly. So it's super helpful having my wife Sylvia, because she speaks Swahili and English. So she's dealing with vendors and people and having to pay people and negotiate, you know, just having her kind of handle that is actually huge. She does a lot of the back office stuff, the organization, the financials, the accounting. So that's really helpful. My sort of right-hand man is our guy, Simon, who's our sort of head mechanic and guide.
Okay.
And he's got a ton of experience working on Royal Enfields, very, very, very much self-taught.
Cool.
But I've been in places with him and he, you know, the bike dies and he somehow manages a way to get them going. And it's a really nice balance, because Swahili culture is very laid back. It's very, what they say is pole pole, is like slowly, slowly, very chill. Mm-hmm. And me coming with my sort of neurotic Western mindset of, you know, everything's got to be perfect all the time.
Right, right.
So we have a really good balance, and he's helping kind of calm me down a little bit.
Sure, sure, sure.
And then we have local partners too. So sometimes people come and, you know, when they want to go on a proper safari, we can outsource a lot of that. One of our good friends owns a safari company as well. So if we need any of his resources or, you know, suggestions on, you know, certain hotels, things like that. And then, of course, with this iRide brand that we're building, all of our partners in Kenya, in Kigali, and then we have some in Dar es Salaam as well. So if people have bike issues down there, we have mechanics that we can outsource and kind of help them out. So that's really, like I said, we want people to feel like, you know, they're coming to Africa. It's a little bit scary. You know, what are the infrastructure? But we're going to have resources for you no matter what you need. And that's kind of the network that we want to build.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Well, let's talk about, you know, you kind of mentioned people might be apprehensive, let's say.
Sure.
To even visit Africa, motorcycles aside.
Yep.
What are some misconceptions that people have about maybe Africa in general, or Tanzania specifically, or riding a motorcycle in that part of the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think Africa in general, right? That just there's not so much out about it. It's got that history of, you know, there's, you know, war, famine, all these different things. And sure. I always tell people, especially in Tanzania, it reminds me a lot about Chicago. There's extreme wealth, there's extreme poverty, there's, you know, challenges in all different sort of ways. But at the end of the day, it's a super safe country. I feel safer there than I ever have living in Chicago, if I'm being totally honest. People are incredibly friendly, very accommodating. Everyone really wants to help you if you get a flat on the side of the road or anything like that. So I always tell people, like, there's no need to feel any, you know, angst or anxiety about safety there. I mean, of course, regular things, you know, I tell people not to ride at night. There's not a lot of traffic lights, you know, we're driving in general, whether you're on two wheels or four,
can be a little bit practical perspective.
Yeah.
Really.
Dangerous. Yeah. You know, mind your belongings if you're out at night, but super safe in that regard.
Yeah.
I think in terms of riding, people think that, oh, it's just hardcore off-road riding. You know, me, I'm more of a tarmac person, let's say. So it's not for me. When that's not the case, I actually have in February, I have a group of Chicagoans coming out.
Oh, no way.
That they're all in a BMW motorcycle club. So in the north suburbs, they all ride BMWs. They're mostly tarmac people. And I've told them, like, look, we can do 70% tarmac for this tour and 30% off-road, but it's not going to be anything crazy. You're not going to be on the edge of a cliff, you know what I mean, with rocks falling down. I've heard stories of like that in Nepal and the Himalayas. Oh, people sure, are like, yeah. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, you're doing like the equivalent of Black Diamond adventure riding. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, and we take it pole pole again, slowly, slowly. So that's a big one where people feel like, oh, I'm not really an off-road rider, an adventure rider. I can't come, but you absolutely can. And then the other thing is, there's a lot more than just the Serengeti, right? Of course, that's sort of like the bucket list thing. Kilimanjaro, of course.
Yeah.
But Tanzania has, you know, you can ride the coastal ride, like on the beach and near sand, which is really cool. You can ride in the Usambara Mountains, which again are twisty mountain roads with amazing views overlooking, you know, different valleys.
Yeah.
We have the Great Rift Valley, which is, you know, known as the Valley of Kings, that stretches all the way up to Egypt.
Oh, wow.
Which has volcanoes and mountain ranges, and it's just you're riding basically in a valley, and it's just beautiful. So there's something for everyone in Tanzania.
Yeah.
And that would be, I say, like, those are the most common misconceptions I would say we get.
Sure. Yeah, it almost sounds like... remember in like history or social studies class, you had like the geography page where it was like a picture of every kind of terrain you could find, like exactly. Mountain, valley, desert, snow, beach, all that kind of stuff. That's almost what it sounds like.
100%. And so it's so hard sometimes planning things for people because there's so much to see and people don't know what they should even see. I'm the local expert, of course, but it's kind of like you can choose your own adventure really. Mm-hmm. And so I always, you know, tell people sometimes 10 days is not really enough because we can do northern Tanzania. And then another thing that we do that I haven't mentioned is for sort of our signature 10-day tour. After 7 days in northern Tanzania, we fly to Zanzibar, which is an island off the coast of Tanzania. It's always been sort of a huge trading port. The Omanis were there, then the Indians were there. There's a kind of a cool kind of Swahili, Middle Eastern kind of cultural mix there.
Cool.
So we go there, we kind of chill on the beach, but we end with one day, we do a full island tour on classic Royal Enfield 350s.
Oh, okay.
So that's just kind of a cool day to kind
of
chill out.
Tour,
That's all tarmac.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of a nice kind of relaxed way to end the tour after doing some kind of dirt and different off-roads riding when you're in mainland Tanzania.
Yeah. So starting this company and building it out and figuring out the tours, did you kind of have to go figure out all the tour routes on your own, like, and kind of design it? Did you have some help maybe doing that from locals or?
Yeah, it was basically, you know, me and my right-hand man, Simon, we just, you know, took about 10 days to go explore, find interesting places, find sort of off the beaten path kind of routes, got lost a lot, but it was a great way for me, honestly, to get a lot of experience riding because that 125cc on you know, concrete in Chicago is very different than certain places in Tanzania. So it was fun for me just to gain a lot of skills riding, but then starting to put together, okay, what are some good routes? And then I think for us, the other big thing is the accommodations, right? For us, I would say we're sort of a mid-level to sort of premium type of tour company. We're not going to, you know, stay at just, you know, a regular hole in the wall that doesn't have good food, that, you know, just isn't going to have the level of service that I think especially our guests oftentimes coming from the US are going to want to have. So that was a big part of it too, is sort of exploring all these different lodges and accommodations. And it's not to say that it needs to be a five-star accommodation by any means. Like one of them, we go up in a place called Mataruni Village, which is in the foothills of Mount Kilimanjaro. And it's a local Tanzanian that owns it. And it's a very simple, I think it's got 8 rooms total. It's very kind of a natural build, but it's overlooking Kilimanjaro. The food, the service is great. So it's not a fancy place, but sort of the experience that you get is 5-star in my mind.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, because one of the things I noticed too is that you kind of take care of everything. I mean, it's basically, you know, beginning to end. It's a full service tour if you want it to be that way. So you really don't have to worry about too much as a guest, right?
Yeah, and that's again going back to some of the things of, you know, it's, and I've traveled, you've traveled, I'm sure it's kind of stressful at times to, you know, plan something and okay, am I booking all the hotels and where am I having lunch on the third day? And some people like to just, you know, fly by the seat of their pants. But for us, I wanted to be very curated because you have to, you know, just getting here is a big sort of, you know, a mental hurdle for a lot of people when you're here. In Tanzania, I want you really to be able to relax and focus on the experience and not have to worry about, you know, coming out of pocket for lunch or this or that and just make it sort of that much more streamlined. And I don't know if we'll do that forever. You know, some people sometimes, you know, I like to include breakfast and dinner and kind of people can kind of pay for lunch or do something on their own. But for the most part, I find that people kind of like, I can fly in, I get in the safari car, we get on the bikes, we kind of do it all, and I don't have to think too hard about, you know, where are we going next or how am I going to pay for this? And, yeah. and for us, I think that kind of works well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, like you mentioned, I've traveled a little bit. I've been to Europe a couple times. And even just going from, you know, the U.S. to Europe is a little bit, I don't want to say culture shock. That might be too strong of a term. But, I mean, things are in a different language. You're hearing different languages. Yeah. It's a different currency. There's, you know, sometimes some different rules and customs and stuff. And I think Africa probably is only that times, you know, X or whatever, right? So it's intimidating, like you said, from the start. It sounds like it's like a really cool way to kind of already have a friend in the city or in the country that can show you around, and then it makes it that much less intimidating. I have to imagine that you see guests become comfortable like within a day or something.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think people that are, you know, bold enough to come to Tanzania, come to Africa, they have a bit of an adventurous mindset already.
Sure,
you know, for
yeah.
a lot of people, it's not their first international trip, or they've even oftentimes, you know, ridden in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always helpful because they understand that, hey, some things are going to happen, you know, the service someplace might not be as what you're used to.
Yeah.
We're going to
yeah.
get a flat tire, you know, something's going to happen. And I always find the guests that have the most fun kind of understand that. And they view that as, you know, part of the experience. And I'll give you an example. We were in a place, recently I had some friends, in a place called Endumet, Wildlife Management Area. So in Tanzania, you're not able to ride the bikes in the national parks,
okay.
oftentimes because there's lions and predators. But in wildlife management areas, those areas are sort of governed by the local population. And there are animals like giraffes and zebras. And you can ride into those on your bike.
Non-predators.
So we go there on our bikes, and it's very cool because you're on your bike and you can see a giraffe and you can be riding kind of very close to them.
Yeah.
But a bike broke down and we're literally in the middle of nowhere. You know, giraffes and zebra are around in Simon, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
The bike is totally broken down. He starts taking it apart. He takes the battery out of one of our other bikes, connects it, jump starts it, and we get going again. And it's just, I have a photo of it. I'll have to share it with you,
yeah,
Mark.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just wild how remote we are. And our guests were loving it because they're just kind of there. Simon's fixing the bike. They're having their lunch, having a break, looking at giraffes and like, wow, this is a wild experience. And so the people that come and sort of have that open-minded sort of perspective always have the most fun.
Yeah. How do you go about doing like the vetting, right? Because obviously you're riding bikes, you're out kind of in it and you're doing adventure riding, which is, you know, whether it's on or off road, it's a little more spirited than maybe just going to the grocery store or
yep.
going for a pleasure cruise for a Sunday afternoon. So, you know, what's kind of your vetting process like to make sure that these folks know how to ride?
Yep. That's a really good question because, you know, like I said at the beginning, I consider myself a beginner. Maybe
sure.
I'm more of an intermediate, but you have people that tell you they're an intermediate and really they're more of a beginner, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think that is a super important piece of it. For our tour itineraries, we give a bit of a survey
okay.
where we ask people a little bit about their riding experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you done a motorcycle tour in another part of the world? Have you done like motocross before? And so that gives us a sort of an initial sort of idea.
Yeah.
Then of course, when we're going through sort of the process, because typically for us, you know, it's not, you don't just go to our website and book a 10-day tour, right? I mean,
yeah.
it's like there's a lot of education that has to happen. Usually I have a quick Zoom call with people. So that kind of puts them at ease a little bit, but then gives me an understanding of, okay, what are they looking for? What's their riding experience? So usually we do it on that Zoom call. And then when we do our tours, typically that first day is sort of a flex day, where we might go on a little bit of a ride, we might get some provisions, but actually right where we're at in Arusha, Tanzania, there's actually a motocross track there that go to on the weekends
and
ride.
Yeah.
So we always actually take our riders there, and we're not, you know, hitting the berms super high or anything, but we do have people go on there and ride a little bit, and that gives myself and Simon, our guide, a really good sense of, hey, who might need to ride kind of right up close to Simon? Who can we give a little opportunity to, you know, speed ahead at certain
sure,
times if they
yeah,
want to kind of
yeah.
open it up a bit. So that's really the proof is in the pudding when we get on there on that track. People love it too because it's, again, not something they normally get to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it gives us a sense of, okay, how's everyone feeling here? What's the skill level of everybody?
Yeah, and like you said, you kind of get a fresh view of what everybody's doing and then I've had a couple of experiences where, like, okay, you get off the plane or you get done traveling and then you jump on the bike and go, and there's no time to, like, get to know the motorcycle. Yeah. And it's like, you're just going. So that's super cool to have, like, a day of, like, hey, we're just going to feel this out. You're going to get a feel for the bikes. We're going to do a little bit of, you know, off-road stuff. That's super smart.
So. Yeah, and we have, like, it gives us a time to adjust the bike sometimes, especially when we have women. Oh, sure. They want it lowered a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's something. And it ends up turning into a bit of a sort of moto clinic where Simon will be teaching them some things and then kind of what to watch out for when we're on the road. So it's a nice sort of entry into the experience before we really get up and go.
Nice. Well, speaking of women riding, does your wife ride?
She rides a little bit.
Okay, cool.
She might be too smart to ride, frankly. She gets on the back once in a while, and then she'll ride when we're in a kind of a quiet area. She does not like all of the traffic and the busy
the chaos,
when we're in Arusha Central. So I'm slowly kind of trying to get her to be a little bit more comfortable on the bike as well, because we actually have a group. It's a really cool business. It's called We Roam Moto. It's a group of women riders.
Cool.
And they're coming in March, actually. So they do sort of these moto expeditions where they go to a kind of a place all over the world. And I think to even become part of it, you have to do a clinic and they teach you about maintenance and riding. So I'm hoping my wife, by then, we can get her comfortable enough so she can ride with those women a little bit as well.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be super cool. What is your, like, favorite part about living in Arusha? Mm-hmm. Like, whether it's motorcycles or otherwise, I mean, I think no matter who you are, that's such a major life change. I mean, I lived on the other side of the country a little bit. I lived in Boise, Idaho for five years. So, and that was a change, you know, coming from Illinois and Chicago and stuff. So I can only imagine that's a big jump, but you've got to love it, you know?
Yeah.
So what's your favorite part about it?
Man, I think one part about it is just now I used to work in the corporate world and had a great experience. And now as a business owner, there's lots of pros and cons. I mean, we certainly work every single day, but I think being able to set your own schedule, being able to wake up and have sort of a leisurely coffee before you start your day, I think just that flexibility in general is great. But I think about Arusha, it's it's a very natural environment. So our house, we have a small little garden. Mm-hmm. There's tons of greenery everywhere. You can go on hikes, you know, it's very, very nice, relaxed lifestyle in that regard. So that's really fun versus, of course, I mean, I love Chicago too, but being in sort of the concrete jungle,
the rat race,
little bit of a different feel. Yeah. I think another cool thing is for me, I love just trying to ingratiate myself with Tanzanian and Swahili culture. So trying to speak the language. Tanzanians, like I said, are super friendly, super laid back. You have all these sort of just little interactions throughout the day, trying to order a coffee, trying to make a joke with people, trying to practice Swahili.
Sure, yeah.
I think that's really fun, you know, trying to become part of the community in that way. And then I think the other thing is there's a very cool entrepreneurial spirit in Arusha as well. Tourism is, of course, big. So there's tons of local Tanzanians in the business. There's tons of expats from other part of the world that are either working in tourism or trying to start their own coffee brand or their own clothing company.
Okay,
you know, I have
cool.
a friend, he's from Italy and he's very into clothing and he's got sort of a safari inspired clothing company, but it's sort of with an Italian sort of twist. So very like
high
end design. Yeah. And so you meet all these really interesting people that are at kind of that inflection point in their life where they're really trying to make entrepreneurship work for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm right in the midst of that as well. So that community that we're kind of building there, I think is really cool too.
Yeah. Do you get to do any riding like for fun? I mean, obviously all the tours and stuff and leading the tours has to be fun, but do you ever kind of just go out on a day off and ride, maybe find a new route or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, we definitely try to make time for that. So in Tanzania, the sort of high season is sort of June through October.
Okay.
And then January and February. And then in between is sort of the rainy season. And so that's when I typically like to go out and find new places. And that's the cool thing about having a tour company is a lot of time the lodges will let you stay for free if you're sort of, you know, investigating or checking out their place, if you're going to bring people. So I think the next big one for us is that Usambara Mountain. So you can go from Arusha to Dar es Salaam, but the Usambara Mountains there's tons of fun off-road stuff, lots of different types of forest, twisty tarmac turns. So that's a place that is kind of next on our list.
Okay.
And then, of course, in and around Arusha, you can just go and explore and you'll find a waterfall or you'll find an amazing track And so, yeah, the possibilities are sort of endless. So I definitely try to make time for that, you know, at least a couple of times a month if I can.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have like a favorite trip that maybe you've taken, you know, whether that's here or in Africa?
I think my favorite trip is, we go to that Chemka Hot Springs, because it's a fun, there's all different types of off-road to get there. You're in Maasai villages. So you're seeing people that live in Maasai bomas that, are just living off the land.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a very cool vibe. And then you go up, like I said, we go visit my wife's Bibi, which is Swahili for grandmother, check in with her, say hello. It's very customary when you're, you know, visiting certainly a family member to kind of bring a gift, bring some rice, bring something.
Okay, yeah.
So you don't want to come empty handed. but then we go to a place called Matadi, which is in West Kilimanjaro, and it's a 5,000 acre working farm.
Wow.
And they farm wheat and barley and actually sell it to a lot of the local breweries. But it's a family that runs it. It's called Simba Farms. And you're overlooking Kilimanjaro, the entire valley. It's just a very comfortable. You feel like you're staying with family there. And anytime I get to ride up there, super peaceful, super relaxing. And it's only, you know, about 2 hours outside of Arusha.
Okay. I have to figure that kind of being from the Chicago and Midwest area has to give you two advantages. One, the Midwest nice, because then it's not so disarming when people are nice to you or want to make conversation, right? And then Kilimanjaro almost reminds me, it sounds like Lake Michigan, where it's like, as long as you know where that is, you can find your directions, right?
Yes, that's okay. That's definitely both true.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And the thing with Midwestern nice is, yes, it's definitely a thing. And like I said, it is an adjustment for me, though, because when I'm trying to do business and get things focused structured, I'm ready to go. But in Tanzania, greetings are very, very important. You don't just go up to someone and say, hey, where's the coffee shop? Or, hey, how do I get here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have to say, hey, how are you? How's your afternoon going? And so Simon on our team always reminds me, if I'm a little bit kind of blunt with him, he's like, hey, man, how's your day going? How is your night? And so that's been a bit of a cultural shift that I have to have when I'm in my sort of business owner mindset. I have to even kind of slow it down a little bit.
You got to downshift a little bit. Yeah.
But yeah, to your point about, Kilimanjaro, it's great on a clear day. Even from Arusha, you can see the snow-capped mountains. So if you kind of know where it is, you can orient yourself. And like I said, you can ride all the way around it, 70% on tarmac, and then that last 30% is really fun off-road where you're going up and down in different elevations.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So as long as you know where it is, you can kind of get east or west depending.
Yeah. You have a three-year-old. Have they expressed any interest in motorcycles yet? I mean, like, obviously they're around it.
Yeah.
So,
Our son Kari, he loves it. He's on a bike right now still with training wheels that I really just need to get off. But I have a great photo I'll have to send you too, Mark, of him not wearing any pants on the motorcycle, reaching for the gear.
Yeah,
so he can get up on his own, which is a little bit scary if we're not around. I'm always worried he's going to fall. But he's starting to get on it. I get him on the front of it. And when we're in quiet areas and we just go for a very simple cruise, and he absolutely loves that. So if he gets into that, I would be very happy. We have to get the training wheels off the bicycle first, I think.
Yeah, that's a good start. Good start. Yeah, I don't know how hard it'd be to get like a PW50 or like a
an e-bike. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You can get them. I have a couple of friends that have maybe like 6 or 7 year olds that are on them. So a couple more years and he might be out and about riding.
Nice. Is there a motorcycle community, I guess, for lack of a better term, kind of like there is in America, where people get together and talk about bikes and that kind of stuff?
No, 100%. And it's growing really, really rapidly. So to your question, yes, like motorcycle culture in general is massive. I would say 80% of people get around on motorcycle, right?
Yeah,
so everyone's got a bike. Everyone kind of knows how to ride. So there's that in terms of there's a motorcycle part shop, spare part shop everywhere. A lot of the local bikes are Chinese bikes, which, you know, people sometimes hate on, but I have one. It's actually from India. It's called the TVS.
Okay.
125cc, but it's great for getting around town, running errands.
Yeah, yeah.
Parts are super cheap. They're often interchangeable, so they can get in any bike. So to that end, yes, if you get in trouble or anything, there's always bikers around, stop and help you. It's a really cool community on that end.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of clubs, that's also a growing thing too. Just last month, there's a big club that went to an area called the Magaroto Forest, which is this lake and this very lush forest. They went on a 3-day ride and did camping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there are a lot of guys that have BMWs, have KTMs that do sort of standard adventure riding. I even met some guys in Arusha. I don't know how they got them, but they have some like old school classic Indians and Harleys and wear a lot of leather. Yeah, and it's kind of like that type of motorcycle club.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So it's definitely growing. Kenya is probably a little bit further ahead in terms of that. But yeah, there's definitely clubs. And one thing that's on my list for 2026 is wanting to start like a monthly community ride where we just get people from the community, go have lunch, have a barbecue, spend a few hours riding, getting to know people. So that's something that I think is, you know, on my list for next year.
Nice. Well, kind of looking into the future, to kind of close it out, what is next for iRide Arusha? You've got the community rides planned. I'm sure you have more ideas for trips and itineraries and all that kind of stuff. Anything big or new on the horizon? I know you're still new, but...
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, just continuing to prove out this... this business concept that we have about this connected network of locations, right? So we want to start doing tours that hit both Rwanda and Tanzania and Kenya so people can come. And for 10 days or 2 weeks, you got a massive view of what East Africa is really like versus just kind of being in one place.
Yeah.
We also want to build some partners throughout the rest of the continent. So we want to make sure that we're hopefully in South Africa, which has great riding. Namibia is coming up really, really fast for people that like sand. So we want to be really a one-stop shop for anyone that's looking to come and explore Africa. We want you to be thinking about iRide Arusha and our sort of iRide brand. So that's really what we want to keep doing. I want to start expanding into Dar es Salaam. Dar is more of like the business capital, so it's a little bit less tourism.
Okay.
But there's amazing places to ride up and down the coast as well.
Sure.
So those are kind of things that are all on my mind as we get into next year.
Nice. Well, one last question before we wrap it up. I guess two, but we'll go with one to start.
Okay.
If you had to, or if you were somebody who's interested in this, you know, but maybe they're apprehensive.
Yeah.
They don't really know if it's right for them or anything like that. What about riding and with iRide Arusha, what makes it unique that like it's an experience that you can't get anywhere else?
Yeah. I mean, I think on the one hand, just in terms of the riding, if they're a little apprehensive or anything about that, I'll go back to my point of like, we literally have something for everyone.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I can put together something for you that's geared exactly towards your skill level and where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, maybe why come to Tanzania or something we have that no one else has, it's the landscape, the cultures, the animals, right? Like a safari for most people is going to be on their bucket list and just in terms of travel and we can do that both on the bike and off the bike to have that amazing experience. But then by the time you leave, you're going to feel like with the things that we do off the bike and sort of our know-how and our relationships that we've got with other people is you're going to leave feeling like, wow, I saw the very authentic view of Tanzania. We did the touristy stuff, of course, as well.
Sure, yeah.
But wow, did I feel like a local for that 10 days and really got to immerse myself in it. And for us, that's really what it's all about in terms of me loving motorcycles and that feeling, but my wife and her passion for showing off Tanzania and her home country. Sort of melding those two things is really what we're all about.
Yeah, it's a perfect combination. So, well, if somebody is interested, where can they find out more?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. So our website is iRideArusha.com. Instagram, we've got all sorts of videos of customers, clients, rides. We're just at iRideArusha. You can always email me if you have any questions. It's Kevin@iRideArusha.com. Check us out.
Easy.
I would love any feedback, ideas. Like I said, we're still very much a new company trying to prove this out. So wide open for people that want to hit us up and give us some ideas too.
Cool, man. I love it. Well, thanks for being here. We appreciate it, Kevin.
Thank you, Mark.
Talk soon.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Driven to Ride. Interact with us and check out full unedited conversations, photos, interviews, video interviews, plus other goodies on YouTube or Instagram at Driven to Ride Podcast. Or you can check us out at DrivenToRidePodcast.com. And make sure you leave us a rating and review from wherever you get your podcasts too. If you have an idea for an episode or a guest, or you want to invite us out on an adventure, email us hello@DrivenToRidePodcast.com. Driven to Ride is wholly owned by Flint Rock LLC, made possible with help from Matthew Miles, and written, hosted, and produced by me, Mark Long. We'll see you out there.